First of all, it's unbelievable to be back, seriously. Great. I'd hardly be exaggerating if I said that half the reason for the trip is just to be able to step into this place and see the Olam again. Several years ago, not so long ago, the British Broadcasting Corporation, the BBC, held an interview with a fellow who was in his 80s. He was one of the children on the kinder transports back at the beginning of the Second World War. And along with about 10,000 other children who were escaping as refugees from the war that was about to start in Europe, he was one of them. And the interviewer was asking him questions about how it was and how they came to England and how they were looked after, etc., etc. And as the interview was underway, as he was opening up more and more, he shared a beautiful story with the fellow who was interviewing him. And he tells him of his friend, who is also amongst the boys who are being transported. And he had this dream of speaking to the King of England and having a private audience with him. This boy, we'll call him Daniel. And Daniel really wanted to have this conversation with King George, the father of the current queen, King George IV. Yes, the little baby is his namesake. And he told the counselors, he told the leaders, he told anyone who would listen to him that he really wants to see the king and speak to him. And they told him it's not so simple. You have to work out, you have to learn how to behave, you have to learn British etiquette, you have to learn how one talks to a king, how one behaves in front of him, how to walk away, you don't turn your back, etc., etc. So they trained him in, and he was convinced that there would come a time where they would actually take him for a private audience with a king. And after a while, this boy is told by one of the counselors, by one of the people in the orphanages, in the orphanage, that the day has come and they're taking him today to see the king. So he's all excited, he puts on his best Shabbos clothes, and he goes with the leaders and all the other boys on this trip, and he's going to be the one to be able to speak to the king. So he's well prepared, he knows how to behave, etc. And he comes to this very wide road. Thousands and thousands of people are lining the streets. There's barricades up, and everybody's talking about the fact that the king is soon coming in the carriage. So he realizes he's been completely fooled. He's not having any audience with the king. He's not speaking to him. They're just calling, they're seeing the king because he'll be able to see, perhaps, the wave of the king from the carriage window. So he's really disappointed. I said, we were watching him. And then suddenly, as the king's carriage approached, as it came closer, he jumped the barricades, he started running towards the carriage, and just as he got there, the guards, the police, pinned him down to the ground, a little child trying to come towards the carriage, and he's pinned down to the ground. And then they see the carriage door open. And King George says, he hears the commotion outside, he sees that there's something going on, he sees that they're holding down a small little child. So he says, come, let him speak to me. And this boy, Daniel, brushes himself up, and he goes towards the carriage, he steps up onto the carriage. King George himself had speech problems, he had a speech impediment when he was younger. And he understood that this child was stuttering and was finding it difficult to speak and was overwhelmed by the situation, as is understood. And the boy then comes and he says, he tries to start talking, but the king allows him a little bit of time and says to him, why is it that you jumped the barricades? Why did you try to come towards my carriage? What is it that you wanted from me? So he says, with tears in his eyes, that there's something I wanted from the king. And so he says, I'm the King of England. I'm sure I have enough connections to do what you like. What is it you want? So he says, I left my parents behind in Germany. I have no idea where they are, where they're up to. There's war breaking out. We're hearing of people dying. I want my parents back. And you're the king of England. I want you to bring them to me. She says, you have to understand, we're in war. We're at war with Germany. He says, I told you I could do anything, but I'm limited when it comes to bringing someone from a country at war with. He says, you just told me that you're the king of England. You can do anything. I'm asking you to bring my parents home. I want them to be with me. I want to be together with my family. He says, I'll see what I can do. And then the guards take him back to where he belonged. And he says, we don't know how or why, but several weeks later, his parents turned up at the orphanage. And then the fellow who's being interviewed by the BBC burst into tears. He says, that's a beautiful story. Why are you crying? So he says, I'll tell you why. Why didn't I do that? Why didn't I jump the barricades? There were hundreds of us there. Why was there only Daniel who jumped the barricades and ran towards the carriage? I could have done the same thing and I didn't. Why? And the truth is, the question begs to be asked. Why is it that one boy did it and the other boys didn't do it? Why is it that we see sometimes that some people are so successful and some people less so? Why is it that some people are willing to fight against what seems to be normal, to go beyond their comfort zones, and others don't? Why? There was a man who was walking around in Italy, and it was wartime, and he came to an area where they had some captives, and he sees a boy, a young boy, and he sees that he has beautiful curled locks. And he's looking after himself, and he's standing in the cave, he's standing behind these iron bars. And he asks him, he says half a pasuk to him. And the child says the second half of the pasuk. And so he says to the child, he says to himself really, and the child listens. He says, I'm sure this child will become a great pasuk one day. I won't budge from this place until I raise enough money to release him, to redeem him from his captives. And so he did that and he released him. This is a story that's told in the Gemara in Gittin on Chesamad Aleph. The Gemara, the man who was walking in Italy, in Rome, was Rabbi Shoben Chananya. And he saw this child, he saw this boy, and this boy became the Kohen Gadol, Rabbi Shmuel Kohen Gadol. What did he see in this child? Because he finished a pasuk. That's some of the pshatim, that since he was able to finish the pasuk, he saw greatness. But really, maybe there's something else also here. Perhaps, the Gemara tells us that he had beautiful curled locks, yifei naim, he had really beautiful eyes, and kvitzosav taltalim shechayros, and toiv roi, he had a very pleasant complexion. And there's no spare ink in the Gemara. There has to be a reason why the Gemara is telling us that this boy was a very handsome boy. I don't remember why, when the Japanese boys were captured, I don't remember anyone talking about how often they gelled their pears or how often they showered and how fresh they looked in the morning. I don't remember anyone talking about that in the fundraising campaign. And the Gemara here tells us that they told Rabbi Shoben Chananya there's a very good-looking young boy here who gels his hair and has beautiful eyes and has a very pleasant complexion to look at. Strange. Perhaps what they saw in this boy is that naturally, a person in captivity, a person who's away from his family, he's away from his school, from his rebbeim, he's on his own, he's a young child, he neglects himself. It's natural for a person to give up. And yet this boy, in captivity, under the Romans, he has these warriors completely in control of his physical life and otherwise, and he still looks good. He has alert eyes, he looks fresh, he's looking after himself, he can finish off a pasuk, his mind's working well. This boy believes in himself. This boy believes in his future. He feels that he has a future. I can go somewhere. There'll come a day where I'll be released from this prison. I'm going to get out of these bars. Such a child who believes in his future, believes in himself, can go far, can be successful. And so therefore, he guaranteed to become something great one day. And Yitaka became Rabbi Shmuel Kohen Gadol. What's the secret of believing in ourselves? If you believe in yourself, you can go far. But what's the secret of a person really being able to see that I can do things that I don't otherwise think I can do? There was a man who came fundraising to Europe once, back in the day. And he went from village to village, he was collecting, fundraising. And he went into one shul, and there were all these fellows with the top hats and the tailcoats. And he solicited them for donations, and one gave more, one gave less. And he was making his rounds, trying to build his shul in Yerushalayim. And then he comes to one shul, and one fellow at the front gave him a much larger donation than he would usually get from the others, than he usually got from other people. So he's very excited about it. He goes around telling everybody that, Baruch Hashem, I got a nice donation today. And then he knows that Baron Meir Amschel Rothschild lives in that neighborhood. So he asks in the shul, does anybody know how I can see Baron Rothschild, the great philanthropist who built many institutions? So they tell him, no, that's the fellow at the front there. So then he becomes black in front of his eyes. He says, Baron Rothschild gave me that little bit more of a donation I got from the others. But you don't ask Rothschild for a little bit more money. You ask Rothschild for a building. You ask Rothschild to build you a campus. You don't ask Rothschild for a few more dollars. He had already asked for his donation. If we realize why we should believe in ourselves, the key to believing in ourselves is to realize that what we have is from the Ribbono Shel Olam. What makes us great, our talents, everybody's unique. Our talents and the things that we have are all from the Ribbono Shel Olam. And if we realize that, if we're aware of the source of our greatness, the source of what we have, then we realize it's unlimited. And if we can tap into the unlimited, we're unlimited. When this man approached Rothschild, he didn't realize he was approaching someone who could give him a building. So he was happy with a small donation. When we approach ourselves, we have to realize there's really an unlimited capability beneath what we see. We have to be able to tap into that by realizing where does it come from? Where it comes from is unlimited. Rabbi Yankel Galinsky tells that he was once in a shul and he heard a fellow davening. He said, the fellow said, Hashem is obviously a simple Jew. And he said, Hashem, I need $15,000. But you know what? If it's difficult for you to give me $15,000, $5,000 will do. $5,000 will get me to the end of the month. That's a person who doesn't realize that he's talking to the one who created the world, printed those bills, created him, gave him a business, decides how much each person should have, health, wealth, and everything else. So he says, you know, Hashem, if it's too difficult for you, I can do with, you know, a $10 bill. When you're talking to Rothschild, you ask for a building. You don't ask for a few more dollars. In the parasha we read last week, Parasha Shemois, the Ribbono Shel Olam has this argument with Moshe Rabbeinu. For 7 days they argued. 7 days of back and forth between Hashem and Moshe Rabbeinu. What was going on in those 7 days? Now, it's beyond our understanding, because we're talking about Moshe Rabbeinu, but the lessons are always there for us to learn. And Ribbono Shel Olam saying, Moshe Rabbeinu, I want you to lead Klal Yisrael. I want you to be the ambassador to Paroi. I want you to be the spokesperson. And Moshe Rabbeinu keeps refusing, and it's going back and forth for 7 days. And finally, Moshe Rabbeinu says these words. He says, "Bi Adoni lo ish dvarim anochi. I'm not a man of words." Moshe Rabbeinu had impaired speech. He wasn't able to talk properly. So he said to Hashem, "How do you expect me to be the spokesman? How do you expect me to be the ambassador, to be the man who represents Klal Yisrael to the king? I don't speak well." So what does Hashem say to Moshe Rabbeinu? Hashem says to him, Misom pe la adam. Who do you think gave a mouth to a man? Oy mi yosim ilem. Who makes a person not able to speak dumb? Oy cheresh, oy pekech iver. Who gave sight? Who takes away sight? Who makes us live? Do you realize who you're talking to? You're saying, you have a problem with your speech. You have a problem, you don't speak well. The words don't come out clearly. Who gave you your mouth? Do you realize it's me? Hello, it's Hashem, it's me. I gave you the mouth. I gave you speech. I gave you words. If I'm telling you to go to Paroi, go to Paroi. That's what Hashem's telling him. You're talking to Rothschild. You're talking to the Ribbono Shel himself, the Unlimited. Don't tell me what you can and can't do. I'm telling you, you can. The Bochum in this room, who just several weeks ago probably didn't believe they could stay in the Beis Medrash for 10 hours a day. Yeah, I'm in the know. And the other Bochum in this room who certainly didn't believe they could do 12 hours and 1 minute in the day in the Beis Medrash. So what changed? They changed? Something happened to them? That now they are able to be 12 hours or 10 hours or whatever it is that they're doing for the incentive program? The Teretz says they tapped into the divine. They tapped into something unlimited. The decision, I want to do and I can do it, now released energy that maybe wasn't even there before. Maybe you're right. You were not able to do it. Possibly. It could be. There's a bach in this room right now who, when challenged in Summersman, while I was still here, to do Maccas 3 times, said he cannot do it. And maybe he was right. It's possible that he could not do Maccas 3 times in a Summersman. It could be. But you know what? He did it. Once he made the decision, he was able to do it. Because when you tap in, when you tune in to the Ribbono Shel Olam, when you tune into the unlimited, you become unlimited. You release new energy. Energy that may or may not have been there before. I'm not talking about davening, necessarily. I'm talking about the energy that we release that maybe will make us daven, that will make us do things that we didn't think we could do. I want to take it one step further. Till now I'm talking about things that perhaps I have a difficulty, and when challenged, if I make the decision to do it, I'm able to do it because I've released new energy. But I want to take it one step further. Even if the Ribbono Shel Olam decides not to give it to you, we can still be successful. That boy in prison who became Reb Shmuel Kohen Gadol didn't only look after himself because one day I'm going to be released. He believed that he would be. He knew that Hashem could. But even if he wouldn't, I will be the best in my situation. I'll be successful as a prisoner and I'll do well in this situation. Moshe Rabbeinu, we don't find that his speech was ever became perfect. And yet he was the leader of Klal Yisrael. He led them out of Mitzrayim, brought them to Eretz Yisrael. And he did negotiate with Paroi, together with Aaron. But he was the leader. With his speech being impaired, he led Klal Yisrael. There's a Rosh Hashiva I know of who has ADHD. No, I didn't say had ADHD. He has ADHD. He has ADHD. He's hyperactive. He cannot sit in his seat for more than a few minutes. So you know what? He runs around the Beis Medrash. 1 second he's over here. The next second he's on the other side. He's asking a kash. He's giving a teretz. He's all over the place. But he's a Rosh Hashiva. And he has ADHD. I know several people very, very successful who are dyslexic. One of them has written Sforim. One of them is a Rosh Yeshiva. They are dyslexic. I didn't say that they worked in it, they got past it, and now they still are, and they're successful. Because in a different way, with getting the no for the requests of being healed, I'm sure they asked, they decided that they can say, I can do it, and they did, and they were successful. Because it's shaykh. Because once again, we're tapping into the unlimited. Unlimited means unlimited to cure you, and also unlimited that with your that this is the way you're supposed to be, and you're supposed to be successful with the problem. And it won't be a problem, it'll be a challenge which will overcome and make you greater, perhaps, than your friends. There's once a Cheder Rebbe, not so long ago, a Cheder Rebbe who gave a project to his boys in the classroom. And he told them all to take a piece of paper and to write, cut the piece of paper in half. And on one of them, he should write all the things they are able to do, all the things they can do, all the things that they feel they are talented with, etc. And on the other piece of paper, they should write the things they cannot do, things that they've seen by their friends or others, which is not them, just not me. So they did it, and each one had these two pieces of paper, the can paper and the cannot paper. And then the Rebbe told the boys that he took all the papers in, he piled up all the ones that all the can papers, in which the list was much shorter than the cannot paper. The boys had written very long lists, so they needed extra paper for the cannot paper. And he took the cannot paper, he said, "Let's go outside." And they all went down to the playground. This has happened in Eretz Yisrael. And he said, "Guys, we're about to bury Eli." He said, like looking at him, what are you going on about? He said, "Eli is Aleph Lamed Yud. Ani lo yachol. I cannot." Everybody has their Elis. Everybody has their Ani lo yachols. Everybody has the things that I cannot do. That's not me. It's not for me. It's not my area. It's not my comfort zone. And he went and he dug a pit. He dug a grave. And he took all those papers and he gave them out to the boys. And each boy buried his Eli. Everybody buried them, and then they put the earth on. And they covered the earth and they made a little grave to be forgotten about within 12 months. He was teaching his boys that there's no such thing. We all think that there's things we cannot do, but there's really no such things. We all know of people who went beyond what they thought was possible. We all know in ourselves things that we thought was impossible, which we're capable of doing. My brother-in-law, just a few weeks ago, was in a taxi. And the taxi driver, I say a simple yid, like I said before, but there's really no such thing. But simple means didn't have a learned, wasn't zeicha to go through yeshivas. So he doesn't have a very learned background, but he knows to keep Torah mitzvahs, he knows to be shomer Torah mitzvahs, to daven three times a day, to keep Shabbos, and he tries his hardest. And the taxi driver tells him that I have a story, and he's crying as he says the story. So I have a story that happened to me a few weeks ago in my taxi. And he tells my brother-in-law the following story. He says, I just lost my father a few months ago, and I'm extremely makbid. I'm to daven with a minyan three times a day. Even as I'm driving around the streets of Tel Aviv, or Yerushalayim, I think he's based in Yerushalayim, but wherever I am, I make sure to be able to daven Shachris, Mincha, Maariv with a minyan. And so, I had a trip scheduled from Yerushalayim to Tel Aviv, which should have taken 40 minutes or so, and we were stuck in traffic, as happens often, and I got there, I had a cheshbon, I had worked it out, I'd calculated, I'd had plenty of time to get to a minyan in Tel Aviv, and I needed the omud for my father, I have to say Kaddish. And so as I'm driving to Tel Aviv, realizing it's getting closer and closer to sunset, closer and closer to Shkia, I realized that time is tight, but I tried my best and we got there and we had just 20 minutes to Shkia. Now in Yerushalayim that wouldn't be a big problem, but in Tel Aviv, 20 minutes to Shkia, you may still be 40 minutes away from a minyan. So he's going through the streets, he's trying, he's looking for people, he's looking for someone with a kapel, with someone with a yarmulke, he's looking for maybe a shul somewhere, he doesn't see anything. And as it gets closer, he's 10 minutes to Shkia, and he sits in his car, he said, "I closed my windows, and I screamed, Tza'akti, I screamed, Hashem, I don't know what I deserve and don't deserve, But my father certainly doesn't deserve it. I haven't missed a minyan for my father in the last few months since my father died. Why does my father deserve that I don't daven with a minyan, that I don't get the omer, that I'm not able to say Kaddish for him? It's almost 10 minutes to Shkia. I'm running around Tel Aviv. I always tried my hardest. Why can't I daven with a minyan? So I cried to Hashem. That's what I did. I said, then I went out of my car, I locked the car and I started walking. As I walk out, a fellow with a white yarmulke comes over to me and he says, and they both say to each other, minyan? He says, where have you been? The other fellow says to him, where have you been? For half an hour I'm looking for the 10th man for a minyan. Where have you been till now? It's 10 minutes to Shkia, come on. He says, you have a guy who needs it? No, we don't, we just need a minyan. So he comes, he downs for an armor and he says Kaddish for his father. That's the story he tells my brother-in-law. I said that my speech is not about tefillah. What this taxi driver, what gave him the power, or maybe what gave him the audacity to talk to Hashem like that? What chutzpah? He's saying to Hashem, you know, my father doesn't deserve this. Do you know why? Because he's talking to someone that he believes can give him anything. The Rebbe Hashem could do anything. And when you feel that way, when you feel you're talking to Rothschild, you have the audacity to ask for a building. You don't ask for $10, you don't ask for $1,000. Give me a campus. We need an orphanage in Yerushalayim. We need a new seminary campus. So please, could you write us a check? He felt that he was talking to the unlimited. I know I'm in Tel Aviv, I've been around for a minute, but you can make me a minion right now, and my father doesn't deserve that I don't have a minion. So give me a minion. So he got it. It's the feeling of unreleasing energy that exists or doesn't exist. If we're able to tap into the divine, to the Ribbono Shel Olam, if we're able to realize where we're coming from in the first place, who gave us what we do have, who gave us the talents and capabilities that we already know we have, and perhaps those that we don't, then we'll be able to break through prison bars, believe that we can be released from mighty warriors that are pinning us down, realize that we can break barriers, realize that we can unleash the potentials that are within us. May we take a zeicha to realize it and believe in ourselves by believing in Hashem. I have to be somewhere 8 o'clock. But. Oh, okay.
Yeah. How are you?
So good to see you.